This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.
David Morgan with you for the week ending 12 April 2019. Well, this week's weekly perspective, I'll start with the stock market, which I've been doing the last several perspectives. Banks are leading the financials and the entire market higher, stock market. The financial spider hit a new 2019 high, and the S&P Bank iShares cleared their 200-day line. So the banking stocks are leading this bull market higher. As I said, the last couple of weeks, we got a confirmation on Dow Theory that we're going higher. And all indications are that we will. How far, how long remains to be determined. I'm not really skeptical of this move in the stock market, but I do think we've probably got one more oomph left. I know others think it would be going much higher. The market knows, I don't, but we'll watch it closely. Bank leaders are some of your favorites, Bank of America and JP Morgan. And the S&P is near a test of its September high of last year. So again, that's confirmation that regardless of what the fundamentals may say, the physical economy and everything else, when you look at what the stock prices are doing, what the numbers are showing, we are in a bull market that looks like it's aimed to go even higher. Last comment on the stocks, Freeport-McMoRan is doing well because copper prices are doing so well. By the way, for those that don't follow us on the paid level, I've been fairly neutral on copper, but there's a lot of comments out there about the EV market, the electric vehicle market, and we've are always willing to change our minds with new data, and we have looked at it again more closely with the current supply-demand configurations, and we've turned fairly bullish on copper. I'm not as bullish on copper as I am some of the other minerals out there, but certainly it's gone from a neutral to positive to I would say very positive, but positive. Just a quick note about the blog that you're looking at. If you want to buy precious metals, there's three or four dealers we know and trust well. We've got one here on the site. This is direct line to goldsilver.com. If you don't know, that's Mike Maloney. And perhaps not the absolute lowest priced out there, but certainly within the ballpark and stellar reputation, that type of thing. We suggest you come to the blog probably two, maybe three times a week. I don't do much in the written world for the free service, but I do a lot of interviews, usually two, three, four a week, and they always get posted up here. I just finished this one with the SGT report, Witch Hunt Over, The Trials Can Now Begin. If you listen to that entire interview or you skip to near the end, there is a special offer for people that have listened to the SGT report that we're leaving for 30 days that will give you not only a discount on the Morgan Report, but something well above and beyond that I've never done before. I'm not going to name it in this because I don't know how many people listen to this podcast, but it's on the website and it's not cheap and you get it for free just for becoming a member through this SGT offer. I'm going to run through these headlines pretty quick today. I want to spend some time with the silver report that just came out from the Silver Institute, and I certainly don't have time to go through the whole thing. We will go through it page by page. We won't write page by page, but in the upcoming premium service, the paid Morgan report service, we will go through it and compare it to the CPM group. We do that almost every year. It used to be worth the price of admission. It used to be worth the price of the Morgan report just to get that one issue because the cost of the CPM silver study or silver yearbook, I should say, and the Silver Institute study used to be, I don't want to misstate it, I think it used to be around $169. It's been free for the last few years, so you don't pay for that one. Anyway, I'm circling back to that right now. The Aussie house market is for more pain. Sydney set for a 9.3% fall, according to Moody's. This is from the Asian Review. Asia's worst aging fears begin to come true. It's all about subtitle, policymakers in South Korea, China, and Japan staring into the demographic abyss. It is a very tough situation. It's not just in Asia. It's also U.S.-based and other places that there's a lot of older people that are dependent on the social system that's been set up by governments around the world. to take care of people, but it's basically a Ponzi scheme. Unfortunately, it's really not set up correctly. In fact, I wrote about that years ago. I digress. Let me come back. And we are putting a great burden on the younger generation that is not rightfully theirs. There's no reason in this world that when you're born, you are responsible to take care of somebody else unless it's your direct family. That's different. But if you are responsible for society at large, that is a socialistic attitude. And as far as I'm concerned, all the study I've done, everything I've read, seen, felt, touched, tasted, is contradictory to the way natural law is enacted. You are not responsible to care for others outside of your immediate family. If you choose to do it, it's voluntary. That is a different story. But if you are born at this generation and you are a working person and your paycheck has to be deducted, I'm talking U.S. now, to pay for, let's say, two elderlies that are on Social Security, that really isn't fair. It really is not fair. So let me come back on another article here. Then going into, I wouldn't really call it the third world, but the emerging markets is the buzzword now. And good term. Crisis deepens as Global South debt payments increase by 85%. External debt payments by developing country governments grew by 85% as a proportion of government revenue between 2010 and 2018. The largest cuts were in Egypt, Cameroon, Angola, Mongolia, all of which are IMF loan programs. So if you don't know, if you haven't read John Perkins' book, I suggest you do. And the way that this whole banking structure is set up, especially on these quote-unquote emerging markets, is to basically go in and make these loans. Really doesn't help the country at large in almost every case. The loans need to be paid back. They cannot be paid back. So what happens is the economic hitman, which is the title of John's book, one of them, then come in and basically take assets to cover the loan. It's very upsetting to me. I'll leave it at that. An interesting article from more of a mainstream financial press. This is from CNBC. Shadow banking is now a $52 trillion industry, posing a big risk to the financial system. Key points: non-bank lenders, often called shadow banks, now have $52 trillion in assets, a 75% increase since the financial crisis ended, so roughly in 10, 11 years. The industry was at the center of the financial crisis when the subprime mortgage market collapsed. Yeah, they were making loans that people couldn't pay back and letting them buy houses. And the whole thing was basically a scam. And then they wrapped these things up and made them into securities and sold them off to pension funds, hedge funds, other governments, retirement planners, all kinds of stuff. Most of you know all of this because anyone listening to my updates is pretty savvy on the financial system. And if they're not, they're coming up to speed rather quickly. And a last bullet point here. Industry officials say shadow banks still face considerable regulation and can help provide buffers in times of stress. Well, we'll see. So I don't know how long winded I'm going to get on this, but the World Silver Survey from the Silver Institute just came out. It's downloadable for free. We'll have it on the paid section of the website, and I'm going to put it on, I might put it on a blog, I don't know, but it's easy to find. I have to use a search engine. I don't want to go too deep in this. As I said, we will do so in the premium service and our monthly publication. But just the first thing here on a summary and outlook, filtering out the noise, blah, 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 blah. First, physical demand increased 4% in 2018, propelled by a modest rise in jewelry and silverware fabrication, a jump in coin and bar demand. So I'm highlighting that and letting everyone see it that's watching the video. And if you're on a podcast, you just listen to it. What I want to point out here is that that's true. And you know me, I say I never argue facts. But it's also a fact that if you go into the table here and you see what the coin and bar demand was for last year, because the 2019 report covers the whole year 2018. So in 2018, 181.2 million ounces in coins and bars. Better, 4%, according to them, than 2017. But it's almost 30 million less than 2016. And magnificently less than 2015, where it was 293.6. Far less than 2014 at 233, far less than 2013 at 240.7 and higher than 2012, lower than 2011. So if I've just gone back, what, 4 or 5 years, it's the purchases have been higher, skipping last year, which was lower. In fact, last year was one of the lowest years, according to this study. And we'll see what CPM says for coin and bar demand, which is not surprising. I mean, so much shine has come off the silver market from the peak, and the cryptocurrency markets and a lot of people getting fed up with silver, some overbuying, et cetera, et cetera. Quickly on the supply, remember, this is the summary, so this is just kind of a top view look, but supply in 2018, global silver production declined by 2% in 2018 for a total of 855.7 million ounces. Global scrap supply retreated 1.6% last year to 150 million ounces. So if you add those two, so 850 and 50 is 900 plus 100. So you're right at 1 billion ounces of silver. That is 855 million mined and 150 round numbers. That comes from scrap. Scrap supply will be increasing dramatically, in my view, due to the electronic waste. And one of our speculations in the Morgan Report has absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, the best company that does this for a variety of reasons. And those that are members, thank you. And I know that you're pretty happy with this speculative investment. On the mine side, it's certainly been decreasing the last few years. I don't want to make a big deal out of it. I want to actually go the other direction. I'm well aware, and Morgan Report members are well aware, that there is a couple of big projects out there, and I mean big, that would overcome, that would make the total mine production numbers higher than they have been the last few years. I am a believer that we're at peak gold unless the technology changes substantially, so I want to leave myself an out. On the silver side, it's certainly by the geological survey stated to be the first mineral to go extinct. I think that was their exact words. But that's at current prices. So if prices of silver go up substantially, and I believe they will in the future, then what's uneconomic today becomes economic tomorrow. And above and beyond that, these discoveries I just have talked about a moment ago do exist and will come into a production mode at some point. One in particular just put out some good news today. We're going to forward on to our members. That is a substantial situation. Most of you can read between the lines and know what company I'm referring to. And again, I don't want to make this too long-winded, but if you look at this chart over here, on the world silver demand side, you'll see the blue is industrial applications. And if you look at this line for 2018 and you squint, you're coming over here to around 600 million ounces, roughly, out of, you know, 855 total mine production. So you could see from 2009 to 2018 through this last year that industrial demand has been pretty level, basically. It's obvious. You can just take a look. Coins and bars have varied a little more. You can see that in the red. And then jewelry and silverware doesn't seem to change that much relative to, you know, ups and downs in the economy, meaning recessions or, you know, better times. For whatever reason, I think they'd be more sensitive, but they don't seem to be. And the reason that the Silver Institute gives, which makes sense, is that if it's recessionary times, jewelry still purchased. It's just people that were going to buy a gold necklace will buy a silver necklace, that type of thing. So whether or not that's the absolute truth or not, I don't know. What I do know is the data that they provide does show that silverware and jewelry actually remains fairly constant regardless of economic times. Coming back to the industrial, it shot up substantially from about 2000 till 2009 or so. You can check earlier publications that are out there. And it's kind of leveled off for this last, you know, 9-10 years, as I'm showing you. But it still is a substantial part of the overall demand side for silver. And I think I'll close out with this last chart over on the right. Monthly real silver prices through 2018 from 1970. I think it's interesting if you look at this chart, of course, seeing the spikes in silver, certainly anyone that's followed me, read any of my work, looked at what I wrote for Futures Magazine, I've talked about this silver being a spiky situation. Obviously, in this chart, you can see the spike of 1980 and the one in 2011. And you can see this long period here of building this huge base through the 90s up until really, what was it? September 2003, I think, is when we finally got above 555 when I called the breakout precisely correctly. Regardless of me, that's what happened. And here's what's followed through. Here's my point. 1970 to 2018 averaged $16.69. That's an average from the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, 2018. So we're looking at almost 50 years, the average monthly price. And we're below that now. As many have said that follow this sector, it's almost unbelievable that silver never made a nominal new high, and that it is so undervalued relative to so many other things, such as, you know, the price of a hamburger or whatever. But regardless, it's higher than it was. It's certainly well off this base. I've talked about the M1 money supply and the real money supply, rather, I meant to say, from the Austrian school. I won't digress to that. I'll leave it there. I do suggest if you are a silver bull or bear, that you get the World Silver Survey, download it, and read it, study it, take a look. They're pretty accurate. I've known them for a long time. They have basically a lot of newer people. Philip Clapwick used to be kind of the head leader on this. He's not any longer, as you can see from the table of contents, moving through the addendums and everything else. It's the beginning of this study. I've gone more than 15 minutes. I'll leave it at that. Remember, there's nothing more powerful than the truth. And if you're so inclined, we certainly would appreciate anyone that would pass on these podcasts or these video updates and get more people involved. We are facing some interesting times ahead. Precious metals are not the answer, but they are part of the answer. Certainly would suggest that you can use this free information as you wish to hopefully enlighten others and at least get them to think differently than perhaps they're thinking now. Until next week, I wish you the best.
This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.